Coming up on Fronteras, as Congress contemplates establishing a new guest worker program, the guest workers of the past still protest unresolved issues.
Gobierno, gobierno, ratero, devuelve el dinero.
Gobierno, ratero, devuelve el dinero.
¿Qué quieren los braceros?
Justicia.
¿Cuánto?
Mónica Ortiz Uribe introduces us to the men known as braceros, who were among the first guest workers to come to the United States. Hundreds, if not thousands, of deported parents try to reunite with children left behind in the U.S.
I've had a very, very bad experience in TJ, but like I said, I have my son to, you know, show me the light, and that's why I'm here fighting for.
A look at what happens to families separated by deportation. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. This week, a bipartisan group of senators released their proposed immigration reform bill, a whopping 844 pages. Even so, the many groups with a stake in the bill started responding within hours of its release. Fronteras reporter Adrian Florido has a sampling.
The bill is so massive because it tackles border security, immigrant legalization, visas for foreign workers, and workplace verification. At an afternoon press conference in San Diego, immigrant rights activists were looking a little tired from trying to digest it all.
You know, we spent the whole night looking at this thing, so I'm still caffeined out.
Cristian Ramirez directs the Southern Border Communities Coalition. He lauded the bill for addressing the use of force and racial profiling by border agents.
So we are pleased with those components. That has to be balanced with the fact that there are still lawmakers in this country that believe that our region needs to be further militarized.
Union leader and state assembly candidate Lorena Gonzalez said the path to citizenship will make it easier for immigrants to unionize.
We want to raise the bar for each and every worker, and we think this bill is going to help us do that.
Business groups responded too. Jeff Burr is a vice president for Associated Builders and Contractors. He praised a new visa program for foreign construction workers, but said
it simply is just too small at the current time.
Across the country, most interest groups that responded say the bill includes things they both like and dislike. The senators who drafted the bill say that means it is a true compromise. In San Diego, I'm Adrian Florido.
Fulfilling the demand for unskilled labor is a big part of the immigration bill unveiled by that bipartisan group of senators this week. One of the oldest and certainly the largest guest worker programs in U.S. history was that of the braceros. Nearly 5 million Mexican laborers worked in U.S. fields over the course of two decades. Mónica Ortiz Uribe reports that even as Congress debates future programs, unresolved issues remain with both current and past guest workers.
¿Qué quieren los braceros?
¡Justicia!
¿Cuánto?
¡Hoy!
Here in this downtown plaza in the Mexican border city of Juarez, dozens of angry men gather every Sunday. They were among the first guest workers to come to the United States back during World War II, when American farm boys traded their plows for rifles.
Algodón.
Amado Estrada Piñon was 18 when he left his Mexican village to pick carrots, beets, and cotton in the U.S. for 50 cents an hour. These men were called braceros, Spanish for strong arms, because of the physically demanding labor they did. Part of their paycheck went to a Mexican savings account that the braceros were supposed to get back as pension money. That never happened. Why doesn't the government give us our money? Estrada says. It's ours. We earned it off the sweat of our brows. In 2005, the Mexican government did agree to make a one-time payment to ex-braceros, but the money has been slow to come. Those that haven't been paid continue to protest. At age 80, there's no such thing as retirement for Estrada. He survives by collecting aluminum cans off the street in exchange for a few pesos. The disappearance of their pension money wasn't the only problem with the bracero program. Some claim they were mistreated while in the U.S. Under today's guest worker programs, problems continue.
Bueno, mi nombre es
Ana Rosa Diaz spent the better part of the last decade peeling crawfish in Louisiana. She sometimes worked 15-hour days for below minimum wage. Her boss would block the exit at work with cardboard boxes so no one could get out. If they complained, he'd threaten to harm their families back in Mexico. As a girl, I don't remember fearing my mother as much as I feared my boss, she says. Diaz worked under the H-2B visa program, which allows tens of thousands of temporary workers into the U.S. each year. Sarah Rich, an attorney with the Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid in El Paso, says one of the biggest problems with temporary worker programs is that they bind workers to a single employer.
They're given legal status to work for that employer only. If, for some reason, they are fired or they want to quit that job, they fall out of legal status and have to leave the United States.
That makes guest workers less likely to report abuse.
They're stuck with that one employer, and that really limits their options. It's sort of an indentured servitude situation. So they put up with a lot.
In the Senate's immigration reform proposal, H-2B workers like Diaz would come under what they're calling a W visa. They'll have the ability to change employers and would be required to receive the same wage as a U.S. worker. Jacob Horwitz of the National Guest Worker Alliance says guest worker protections like these are important but can be difficult to enforce.
Without really strong labor protections for guest workers, we'll continue to have a situation where corporations can go shopping for the cheapest workers on the global market.
Back at the Bracero protest in Ciudad Juarez, volunteer nurse Blanca Duran takes vital signs on a park bench. Their protest complete, her aging patients wear the same worn look, as if they just returned from a day in the field. Duran says these former guest workers feel forgotten. They work so hard for so long, she says, and now many are dying without ever receiving the compensation they're owed. In El Paso, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
Today, we launch a multi-part series on deportation. Our first story focuses on the children left behind. In 2011, some 1,500 children in Southern California were removed from detained or deported parents and placed in state care. That's according to an investigation by the Applied Research Center, a think tank specializing in race issues. They projected that between 2012 and 2014, 15,000 more kids could face a similar fate. For the Fronteras Desk, Aaron Siegel McIntyre reports.
It's 3 in the afternoon, and I meet Israel Soriano in downtown Tijuana. He arrives with his little sister in tow. She's 14 and on spring break, visiting from Southern California. Soriano is tall and friendly, with an easy smile. He's still new to Tijuana, and is still trying to adjust to life in Mexico. He grew up in Orange County, California, after his mother brought him to the United States as a baby.
I didn't even realize I was an immigrant until I was like 14 years old.
But Soriano was deported 2 years ago, at age 25, after a drug arrest.
I was in a nightclub with ecstasy pills, and they arrested me. But the thing is, I had never been in jail. I'm also a father. So they were telling me that if I didn't come out of jail, that they were going to adopt my son if I didn't fight for him and all that.
Soriano says he pled guilty because he thought he'd be released from jail faster. He didn't think his plea had immigration consequences, but it did. Permanent mandatory deportation with no right to counsel or appeal. His 2-year-old son is now with a foster family in California, while Soriano tries to prove to the state that he's fit to parent.
The social worker told me, listen, if you really want your son, this is what you need to do. You need to get on it now because your son is young. He's beautiful. Anyone would fall in love with him.
For children who become wards of the state, reuniting with a parent can be difficult. That's true for anybody. But detained or deported immigrants sometimes face huge barriers. Because of a general processing backlog, immigrants can be kept in detention for long amounts of time. That means parental rights can be terminated before a parent has the chance to be released or prove that they're fit to regain custody.
It's a constant difficulty trying to get all the systems to work together.
Candy Mays is the director of the nonprofit Dependency Legal Group in San Diego. I met her in a San Diego coffee shop. Her team of lawyers is contracted to represent dependent children, that is, kids without legal custodians. Mays says that immigration policies and child welfare policies don't work well together. In fact, the timeframes sometimes clash.
They don't align at all, actually. The federal procedures operate within their own timelines, and they have different priorities.
Worse, it can be hard to locate parents who've been detained or deported.
Some of these detention facilities are not easily accessible. You know, they might be remotely located. Sometimes they're sent out of state into other facilities. Just knowing that everybody's okay is a huge deal and can take 10 days for anybody to get that information. That's a long time to go without knowing if your kids are okay.
Reunification attempts are made even more difficult when a crime is involved, which is often the case. Those deported under a felony or aggravated felony conviction are banned from the U.S. for life. That means deported parents deal with someone like Janet Barragan.
And we explain all the options, we help them navigate.
Barragan is the international liaison for the County of San Diego's Child Welfare Agency.
Most of them stay in Tijuana, although they're from the interior, they stay in Tijuana. So we help them navigate and access those systems in Tijuana.
So how many families face these kinds of separations? The numbers are hard to come by. What we do know is that between the end of 2010 and the last quarter of 2012, over 12,000 immigrant parents of American kids in Southern California were deported. Israel Soriano says he's been trying to gain custody of his son since last May. In Tijuana, he's taking the required parenting classes and also gets drug tested twice a month.
I know that it's going to be hard, but I'm going to raise him where I need to raise him, and I'm going to raise him properly, and I'm going to show him love. I'll find a way, but I'm keeping my son, and I'm making it work.
Two new bills in California, the Call for Kids Act and the Reuniting Immigrant Families Act, aim to help separated families by mandating phone calls for detainees and by giving child welfare more time to reunite parents and kids. From Tijuana, I'm Erin Siegel McIntyre.
This report was produced and reported by Erin Siegel, Joel Medina, and Beth Caldwell, and was funded by a grant from the Soros Foundation. There's still more Fronteras coming up. Although most deportees are adults, some are minors.
At any one day, there is 25 children in detention in San Diego County.
A look at what happens to the kids deported by the United States. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Under the Obama administration, over 400,000 people were deported from the United States in 2012. The majority were adults, many with criminal records, but minors are sometimes caught up in this enforcement dragnet. What happens to children and teens detained in the U.S. without papers or deported without parents? For the Fronteras desk, Erin Siegel McIntyre reports.
Located on one of Tijuana's busiest streets, Casa Imca is a refuge for minors who've been deported from the United States. All are under the age of 18. On a worn couch in a multi-purpose room, we spoke with Araluban, a 17-year-old from Michoacán, Mexico. He'd been deported just 2 days earlier. Araluban is tall and lanky. He's soft-spoken and was so nervous about being interviewed that he asked us not to use his last name.
Nada más crucé, y pues el reitero nunca llegó.
He told us that he walked through the hills and made it across the border. He arrived at the freeway, his designated pickup point, but then his ride never showed up. Araluban waited without food or water for 3 days. Eventually, he was apprehended by U.S. Customs and Border Patrol. He says he was detained for 2 nights. Then he was transported to Casa Imca in Tijuana. Since 1980, the shelter says they've served over 40,000 deported minors. Most of the youth here are caught trying to enter the United States. Approximately 80,000 juveniles are apprehended each year by immigration authorities. That's according to a 2009 report by the Congressional Research Service. Some kids, including Araluban, are returned to Mexico without setting foot in a courtroom. Typically, kids stay at Casa Imca until a family member can be located. But for those kids who aren't deported quickly and end up in American court, nonprofits like Casa Cornelia can help. Casa Cornelia provides free legal representation to all detained minors facing deportation in San Diego.
Very few people know that there is this huge group of immigrants that is under the age of 18, that is unaccompanied, that is abused, abandoned, neglected, fleeing persecution, fleeing harm.
That's Elizabeth Camarena, Casa Cornelia's Associate Director of Legal Programs. Camarena expects that they'll represent over 300 minors in 2013. Her clients can be as old as 17 years old, or as young as 4.
We find that the child who has been detected and detained, who has been living in the United States, is a completely different client, type of client. They have a lot of difficulty even just processing the fact that they are in danger of being removed from their home. A lot of them just can't believe that this is real or this is really happening.
Youth living in the U.S. without legal status often don't realize they're not Americans. That is, until they're detained by immigration authorities, says Camarena.
The most common, I would say, is they typically are a passenger in somebody's car. But we also have had children who are picked up at a bus stop. We've had children who are picked up at a trolley station.
Hundreds more minors are identified by county juvenile probation departments. A shoplifting incident that might result in a slap on the wrist for an American teen can result in detention and deportation for an undocumented minor and a criminal record. Back in Tijuana at Casa IMCA, various children are using the rec room. There are board games, books, and videos. Uriel Gonzalez, the director of Casa IMCA, says that many of the kids here are familiar faces, and many of them have familiar stories. A petty crime, a stolen car, a drug arrest. These teenagers often don't understand the gravity of their situation. Under current law, most teens with criminal records can never legally re-enter the United States. Gonzalez says that even troublemakers tend to calm once they arrive at Casa IMCA. This, says Gonzalez, still doesn't stop kids from trying to return home to their parents north of the border.
When they arrive here with us, they have already tried crossing and returning to try to cross and returning again, 3, 4, and 5 times. This is what we call the normal process of the youth vicious cycle, coming, going, and coming, and going.
In Tijuana, I'm Erin Siegel McIntyre.
Nearly 250,000 parents of American citizen children were deported between 2010 and 2013. That means a new influx of American kids are now living and learning in Mexico. For the Fronteras Desk, Erin Siegel McIntyre reports on the tough educational choices faced by the American kids of deported parents in Tijuana.
When a parent is deported, children usually follow. It's stressful for American kids and the Mexican schools alike.
He cried for the first 4 days. He cried, but now he's happy. He met two friends that speak the same language.
That's Rosa talking about her 10-year-old son. None of the subjects in this story would allow us to use their last names out of concern for their uncertain legal status. We met Rosa at a support group meeting for foreign children, mostly Americans, who are adjusting to going to school in Tijuana. Rosa's kids don't speak Spanish, but they're enrolled in Mexican schools anyway. The reason they're here?
We came to follow Dad here.
They're two of an estimated 4,000 American citizen children who currently attend school in Tijuana. Most are children of deportees. That's according to Yara Amparo Lopez. She facilitates this support group and is the state coordinator for the Binational Educational Program for Migrants. It's a government program designed to help foreign children enroll in school and adapt to the Mexican educational system.
We don't have enough teachers, nor do we have a bilingual education program.
Lopez says Mexican schools aren't equipped to offer bilingual education or to teach Spanish as a second language. She says her office is interested in sponsoring an exchange program with American teachers to learn about their experiences with teaching ESL. The main goal of the program is to help American kids adjust, but the language and cultural barriers are just too much for some, especially teenagers like Arya.
I don't speak Spanish, so I don't really talk to people down here. And over there I could understand people, but over here I can't.
Arya is 14 and a U.S. citizen. She grew up in Lemon Grove, California. She moved to Mexico a year ago with her American mother, whose husband was deported. School in Tijuana didn't seem like an option, so instead, Arya attends school online. It's a special program offered by the new Youth Recreation and Education Center in Tijuana. Chris Najera and his wife, a teacher in San Diego County, founded the center at the beginning of the school year to offer the increasing number of American kids another option. Najera himself was deported to Tijuana 9 years ago. So far, less than a dozen kids attend the school. Tuition is more than many here can afford. And most of the students are teens because, as Najera explains,
it's a culture shock for them. On the other hand, for younger kids, you know, it's not that big of a deal. You know, they can easily adapt to, you know, new lifestyle.
Most of the students, Najera says, also have a deported parent. The school is an alternative to the situation facing kids like Mikey, who can't study in Tijuana and instead cross the border every day to keep attending American schools.
I kind of get embarrassed when I talk Spanish because I don't talk Spanish that good.
Mikey is 15 and grew up in Los Angeles. He's now lived in Tijuana for 5 years. It can be tricky to matriculate to an American school without an address in the States. Mikey explains how his mother helped him enroll.
Well, she said that we were homeless because we didn't have an address to use.
Mikey wishes his family could return to the U.S., but he's realistic.
Sometimes I don't want to because, like, I don't want my dad to get sent to jail forever.
Still, he wishes his dad could see him graduate from high school. Although Mikey spends a lot of time in the exhaust-clogged borderline, the teenager has a nonchalant attitude about the hardship.
We cross off every day. We leave at 4. We just wait. We wait for 3 hours.
That means if he's had an average annual attendance, let's say about 170 days of school each year, Mikey has spent 2,550 hours of his life waiting in the borderline since his dad was deported. That's 106 full days waiting to go to school. From Tijuana, this is Aaron Siegel McIntyre.
This series was produced and reported by Beth Caldwell, Aaron Siegel McIntyre, and Joel Medina, whose independent journalism is funded by a grant from the Soros Foundation. You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversation and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.